Welcome to the Promise Brand Podcast, where if you are someone trying to better understand how to tell the story of your brand, you're in the right place. Welcome. If you've been selling well for years and years and years, or you are just starting something new, this is a great place for you to learn how to strategize and tell the story of your brand. We have conversations with amazing founders, executives, leaders, and people in the strategy space who are pushing ahead and pushing the needle forward to change the world. I'm Luke Frazier, founder of Parable Brand, where we're on a mission to simplify brand strategy so that companies can increase employee engagement and client retention. I am really excited to continue these conversations because what we're really doing here at Parable is building a bridge from people's problem to their solution. Not our solution, not your solution, but building culture that helps grow companies. And so if you're that company, if you're that executive, if you're that leader that is confused about any of that, that has not really nailed down the story, or maybe you've nailed down the story, but your culture is missing, this is an opportunity for you to grow. Today's conversation is with Sarah Delaney, founder of Sarilla. Sarah is a lifelong entrepreneur. She's a global activist. She has done everything from the nonprofit world to the VC world to now starting her own companies and working directly with farms to develop sustainable processes for our food. Now, more so than being alcohol-free since the age of 28, Sarilla is really designed to give life and relief to those who need it, along with supporting and assisting those in Rwanda. Sarah's done amazing work, and today we get to talk about her perspective on brand, her perspective on strategy, her perspective on just food and CPG in the world and what is going on in culture. Very excited for you to listen to this conversation. So enjoy this conversation with Sarah Delaney. And I'm only jealous because she just cracked open one of her beautiful cans, one of your beautiful mocktails. And Sarah, there are a lot. Look at that. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. If people want to, I'm just going to tell them right off the bat, you have an amazing TED Talk that they should go listen to. They should go get into that. But I was telling you right before this, as we dive in, we're very story-based here. We're like, I think the lifeblood of humanity rests in story. And so one of the things I asked you to think about was, what have been some stories that inspired you to get to where you are today? And how do the stories maybe even just kind of keep popping up and keep driving you forward?
Yeah, thanks, Luke. It's good to be here with you. And I appreciate that question a lot. So I think that stories, you know, can, well, it shapes our day. Mm-hmm. Like, we create stories all day long about what kind of experience we're having. Mm-hmm. And I think to know that is empowering too, because if we're experiencing a story that doesn't feel good, we can also change it. Mm-hmm. I heard someone tell me one time, like, sometimes our reality, it can be changed just like turning the page of a book.
Yeah.
You know? So we're the producer of our own movie, creator of our own destiny. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, especially on tough days, I think those are really great ideas to hold on to. In terms of building a brand, I mean, it can be rough. It can be exhausting.
Yeah.
It's
the founder journey. Like, it's a roller coaster.
It is, but it's so fulfilling too. Yeah. And one thing that jumped into my mind was a story recently that I was experiencing in the moment. You know, I met this couple here in Asheville, and they're about 2.5 years sober, mm-hmm. getting married.
Wow.
They're actually married now, but my husband's a realtor here, and he had been talking with them about a building for their business and connected us. And long story short, they decided to have Cirilla as their main beverage for their wedding this summer.
Oh, wow.
And so it was the first sober wedding that we provided beverage, like 100% sober.
Wow.
I mean, they made this really, I would say, you know, being someone who's 17 years sober,
yeah,
I can only imagine how tough that decision was,
right,
to think about. Like, we have 100 friends coming, family, mm-hmm, like a lot of them do drink. Should we, mm-hmm, offer alcohol just to make them feel better, comfortable, whatever? And so, mm-hmm, it's, I think it was a very courageous decision, yeah, for them to make. And we actually, you know, wrote a story about this,
yeah,
to inspire others who maybe are on that same similar path and thinking, you know, I'm a little afraid to make that call, mm-hmm, for this important day. But the day is about the folks, you know, getting married and, yeah, all the people supporting them. So, wow, the story part, though, is really like, in that whole process, it wasn't that this was like a big account for me. It wasn't like, yeah, going to be this big money maker, mm-hmm, but I decided I made the kegs myself.
Wow.
I made the kegs. I made them a special wedding blend of Cirilla,
mm-hmm,
and I decided to deliver the product myself that day.
Mm-hmm.
And like, as I'm driving to this wedding venue, I just got overwhelmed by emotion, oh, thinking about, you know, when I was first sober,
mm-hmm,
one of my biggest fears was I'm not going to have anything to drink at my wedding.
Yeah.
Or actually, even worse, I'm never going to get married because I'm not going to have a social life, because, mm-hmm, I'm not going to be able to date.
Yeah.
I'm never going to go out again. My life is going to suck without alcohol,
mm-hmm,
but it's going to suck even worse if I keep drinking.
Yeah.
So, you know, and now that I'm on the other side of that, my God, I wish like those fears got in the way, because my, right, life is so much better.
Yeah.
So it just was such a like full circle, beautiful experience to be part of this couple's journey who, mm-hmm, has so much courage and like,
wow,
intention about the way they're building their life together.
Yeah.
And I was just so emotional, like delivering these kegs, you know, and I get to the venue and this woman comes out, I guess it was her venue. And she's like, oh no, we don't have a liquor license for this wedding. She saw my kegs. I have these, and I was like, yeah, oh no, it's not alcohol. And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, no. And we have, they have, yeah, like a bar and a bartender. And it was amazing. And then to see the photos after.
Yeah.
I just want more people to hear stories like that, because, mm-hmm, you know, when you think about weddings and parties and socializing, like it can be a lonely,
yeah,
isolating journey, like, right, to try to do it without alcohol.
Right. Well, and if like, as you talk about that, I think just about sort of Americanized society, and maybe this is a little bit global, but at least here sort of natively in the States, like, we just have a narrative. There's a cultural narrative that says I need X to enjoy my life. And in fact, as like marketers, people play off that all day long. You're without something, I have the fix. And of course, right, that's what drugs do. It's what alcohol does. It's what all of these things do. And so it makes me curious for you, because you've been in the nonprofit space, you're in the for-profit space, you have a product that is non-alcoholic, and you're in some level, it's like competing against alcoholic drinks, but it's not competing against alcoholic drinks. How do you view differentiation when it comes to something so polarizing, like fixing a need, like fixing something that is wrong? I can't have fun unless I drink. I can't, mm-hmm, you know, I can't be loved unless I'm married. Like, how do we, as sort of humans in America, deal with that? Because you have really pushed forward in terms of differentiation when it comes to like a brand, but also mentally, but also just personally. So I guess really what I'm asking is like, how do we go about that? How did you go about that?
Mm-hmm.
And then how can we as a culture sort of shift that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, one thing that comes to mind as a marketer, you know, you either choose when you're marketing, let's say a brand, a product, it's either going to be we're solving an issue of joy, like we're providing joy or relief. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was surreal. I was going back and forth. I'm like, it's both. I'm like, it's, you know, yeah. we're this joyful, happy, bright. And I was kind of leaning in towards the joy part. And then recently I'm like, no, like if I had to pick, it's freaking relief, because it's most humans are more motivated by solving their issue of being afraid and feeling lonely. And we're not going to use those words in marketing material, but like ultimately we're solving the issue of being afraid and lonely. Absolutely. Because we're building community and we're helping people feel connected and part of and included. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times, I mean, pretty much every time I go out to eat, which isn't a lot anymore, but my husband doesn't drink either. And, you know, you sit down and they bring the beer and wine menu and we ask, what do you have that's non-alcoholic? Our wallets are out. We're spending money on really good food. And they're like,
yeah,
like, I don't know. I'll, you know, we have Coke, water, whatever. And like, do you have anything else? Like, well, I can go check. You know, it's this whole thing. And it's like, and that's just me and him. And when you're with a group, it's like, whoa, what's wrong with me? Am I like causing a problem here? Like, it's this less than feeling. So I think there's like, we can approach marketing and tapping into those feelings and emotions that consumers have in a really positive way. Mm-hmm. Like, we're doing a service, we're helping, we're not playing off of someone's vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. We're actually helping solve this issue, because like my dream is for you sit down at a table, same scenario.
Yeah.
They bring the beer and wine menu. There's a group of six people, three people order a beer, wine, cocktail. The others are kind of like, you can tell they're like hesitating. The server's just like, oh, hey, can I get you a Cirilla? Here's our flavors right here on another piece. And it's totally normalized, you know? And so, but bring me back to the question, because I started to answer it.
Well, no, this is so good. Well, we're sort of talking about this idea that there's some polarization to the fact that we build products and services around what people are without. And so you're alluding to this fact that your product and service doesn't just bring people joy, but actually it's giving someone relief. Mm-hmm. And what I'm wondering is, how can more people figure out from a business perspective, how can we actually sort of impact like at whole the culture that's in the world that has these like weird, you know, lies that we have to believe growing up. I need alcohol to have a good time or whatever. How can we begin to change that as business owners who are creating products and services that really are valuable to the world?
Yeah. And I think if we can come at it in a way where we're providing, I don't believe we empower other people. If we're providing a tool for them to empower themselves, I think I posted something on LinkedIn recently about this, and it's like, I don't actually think a product solves a problem. Mm. It does. It solves a small problem, but not the root problem.
Right.
It might be like a band-aid, but it's really always an inside job.
Yeah.
So how can we make it easier for people to like solve their own problems and like get to the root of it, which is, you know, emotional, mental, psychological, trauma, healing, all these deep things. And if we can even be like a tipping point or a catalyst for them to take that next step and make it like a little bit easier, which, you know, we look at, well, if 50 to 60% of American adults are trying to reduce their sugar and alcohol consumption, like, but then they go out and they don't have options, like it makes it harder. So how can we be right there for them when they're already on that path to make it a little easier? And then the next morning, it's going to be easier for them to get to the gym, and then they're going to choose a better breakfast, and it's like it stacks, right?
Right.
And then before you know it, they're feeling like more confident, courageous, like they're doing the thing, and they've found brands and products along the way that can support that new shift of a lifestyle that they've created.
Yeah.
But if we're just creating a product that they get like hooked on and addicted, whatever it is, like, and they need it to feel like they can do their thing.
Right.
I don't think that that's like a sustainable empowered solution either. But like, also I think when we help our consumers and loyal fans and community be their own power, you know, empowered person, they're going to even love us more. They're going to be like more loyal over time. And I think stay with us over a longer time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tend to look at brands and at culture and specifically, you know, what you guys are doing and where you have been even. And I am very impact driven and focused. It's something that from a young age, whenever someone asked me what I wanted to do with the world or with my life, it's like, well, I want to help people. And years ago, I started, before I got into business, I started a podcast and I'd ask people about their purpose in life. And I interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people, founders, you know, creatives, people all over the place. And there was sort of this like overwhelming response that anyone who created some kind of thing wanted to impact the world. They wanted to help people. And it's an interesting idea because at its core, I think if we really ask ourselves, we all really do want to help people. We want to make an impact. But brands also have to make money. And it's a bit of a leading question because for some people, there is that tension of like, we just want to make something that makes another dollar. And I want to become a millionaire, or I want to become this, and then so that I could do these other things. And if you talk to all the best marketers or read all the best marketing books, it says you can make $1 million, but it also, they then tell you, you have to serve people. And you came from sort of that nonprofit activist world where it's just, no, all we do is serve people. We need to raise money, but we need to serve people. I think you just have a unique perspective on this, and I really just want to talk about the tension for a second. What is your perspective on the tension between we need to make money, whether it's nonprofit or for profit, we need to make money and we want to make an impact in the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. I work with this woman, Dorothy Andreas, and she's a coach for me right now. Yeah. And we talk a lot about this and just money mindset and, you know, financial healing and what kind of, I guess, you know, approach to abundance and financial history of our families. It's so complex.
Oh yeah.
Like what we come into as children. Mm-hmm. What did our parents
the money think blueprint. About money? And
oh my God, the money blueprint. And it's like,
yes. Yeah, we're all messed up. We thought we were only messed up when it came to like mental health and addictions. No. It's the money blueprint that really messes people up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so important to look at, and it's really tough to unwind and unravel. But I mean, it can be done. We can reprogram every part of our mind, body, cells. So I'm working on that. But you know, my first job out of college was corporate. It was a big investment bank in Boston. Yeah. And I studied business management, finance. And you know, I've always been very entrepreneurial, but I think I got to a point where I actually, my last semester of college, I got really passionate about VC, and I started interviewing with these different VC firms, mainly in the Boston area. Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is what I want to, but I think what I loved about it was the entrepreneurial part. It was like diving into businesses that were just getting started, how to come up with evaluations. It was the building part. It wasn't necessarily the money side. And I had interned at a merger and acquisition firm my senior year, and I loved it. I loved just like diving into different industries, mm-hmm. and it was the learning and research and analysis.
Yeah.
But when it came to like, you know, the senior, like the people I was working with, and okay, once the deal got going with the money, I was like, okay, I want to go back to like research and learning.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I did end up going kind of traditional initially. And I thought, well, you know, if I can just make a bunch of money, do this track, then we'll figure the rest out. Like we'll figure the purpose, the passion, the meaning, mm-hmm. the impact out. But I mean, my higher power did for me what I couldn't do and like cut that real short. Like mm-hmm. it didn't last long. And it was like less than a year I was starting my first business. So. Yeah. I think everyone's different. I you know, sometimes wish I was a little more like just driven by that soul thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in some ways it'd just be easier. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, but now I'm at a place where, I mean, I'm grateful for my approach to building this holistic company and, you know, on a very like self-serving level, being of impact and doing things like that feel very meaningful and helping other people, it really helps me. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe some people on the other side, like searching for the impact part, don't understand that piece that mm-hmm. like I had to do this. Like I had to do impactful work to make myself feel okay.
Yeah.
And you know, we're not in a therapy session right now, but there's a deep thing there, right? Yeah. Like if you peel back the layers on a lot of entrepreneurs, there's a lot of stuff like I need yes. to prove, I need yes. to like make a difference. I need right. to like high achieve this and that. And so for me, you know, I chose to build this like global company. I mean, we're building a farm in Rwanda, like yeah. doing regenerative agriculture mm-hmm. in beverage, perhaps one of the most challenging category, like all the things are the most challenging.
Yeah.
And so it's rewarding. But it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, for people who maybe are looking at how to make a difference with what they're doing or with the money that they have already mm-hmm. made, you can just call me. I'll give you ideas.
Yeah.
I have so many ideas. Yeah. I mean, I have so many things that I want to do yeah. later with that money that I, you know, eventually I'll earn and have in the bank, besides taking care of my family. And
right.
I think we each have our own battle. Like we each have our own thing that tugs at our heartstring. Mm-hmm. We can't fix everything or
yeah.
save everyone. I don't even think we're supposed to save anyone.
Yeah.
It's really about saving ourselves and like tapping into what that thing is inside that hasn't been let out.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's like just on your day-to-day basis, like what's the thing that bothers me the most about society or the world or,
yeah.
you know, is it the way people treat, you know, animals? Is it this? And then just start dipping into that mm-hmm. field, volunteering a little bit and seeing, like, always look for the root of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't, you know, as much as I've been the founder of nonprofits, like I don't believe in that charity model. Like look at who are the people like making an impact by going to the root of things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know there's a lot of well-meaning like founders that do this, like buy one, give one mm-hmm. concept. And I'm not big on that. I mean, sometimes it works, I think, in emergency situations where mm-hmm. of course people need their basic needs met.
Yeah.
But like why is there so much poverty in this community?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they have water and shoes and this and yeah. that? Let's go to that level.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a one size. I think with impact it's far too general. There's not a one size fits all answer solution. And to maybe to that point, one of the things that I like to, when we work with the clients, we actually help reframe the whole thing to the point of your brand is an entity that actually leads someone from their problem to their solution. It should never lead them to your solution. And that's a different reframing, because I think a lot of marketers, a lot of people in brand strategy, a lot of people in brand are like, no, we have the solution to our customer's problem. And you like on some level you should, but what you have to realize when you're communicating with people, you and I talking, we have different perspectives of the world, right? You saying you want to make an impact in Rwanda is different than me wanting to make an impact there. But we both think we're making an impact. And so to that point, I love sort of the nitty gritty, get your hands dirty, customer research, which is sort of a stale word for it. But like, if we really do want to make an impact, to your point, you have to get in the, like go talk to people first, which seems mm-hmm. like such a silly thing. We find this a lot in brand strategy where we get in with a client and it's like, have you talked to your clients about what they want recently? And like overwhelmingly, people don't do that. We assume, oh, I know, I've seen the data, I see what the keywords, I see what people are researching, I know what they want. And that, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, it comes from a self, I think it comes from self focus place. I'm realizing, Sarah, in this conversation, we probably should have had a psychologist and therapist on as well, because I think we're solving some deeper issues here as well. But
it's deep. But oh my gosh! I mean, I love what you said. Look, about we're not like their solution is going to be different yes. than ours, and yeah, it's so true. You know, and I think everything starts with a needs assessment. And as you see from all the surveys data, like the data, the surveys, it doesn't always match the behavior.
Yeah.
You have to get out and just observe. And like,
yeah,
that's what I first did with my nonprofit, mm-hmm. like headed to Rwanda. We did not make any assumptions.
Right.
There were too many like Western solutions coming in, yeah. trying to solve these perceived problems that weren't even there. Mm-hmm. They right. weren't addressing the real problem. And
right.
so like, yeah, even to your point, just do a needs assessment. And I think if someone's looking to make impact, ask why. Like, mm-hmm. why are you? Is it because you think you should? Because you're getting peer pressure? Because society mm-hmm. says like, you're not worthy if you don't? Or like, you know, maybe your measurement of impact is off. Like yeah. you are making an impact. How am I making an impact in my son's lunch by packing healthy things, you yeah. know, like there's right. different levels of impact.
Right.
And I think if it's more like, okay, we want to make a big splash mm-hmm. because we want the marketing, mm-hmm. Like that's different.
Yeah.
Is it, and maybe, you know, we're lucky, we're passionate about impact driven causes. Mm-hmm. I think that's a real blessing to yeah. be clear on that, but someone can still make a big impact and not be passionate. Maybe yeah. it's because they really feel like we all need to do our part in reducing climate change. We all need to do our part in like helping the earth. Mm-hmm. And here's X, Y, and Z way to do it. It's all laid out for you. You don't yeah. need to figure it out.
Yeah. This reminds me, you brought this up a little bit earlier, some of the work that you are doing sort of on the other side of the business in Rwanda with regenerative ingredients. And this is something you're really passionate about, something you're excited about, somewhere you want to make impact. But we were talking offline beforehand, and you mentioned something really interesting about sort of regenerative ingredients and then somewhat of the mindset that we have here in America today. We're now going into, my wife, we just had a baby, for instance. She radically mm-hmm. learned that red dye 40 or whatever is in everything and we can't eat it because of X, right? And so no joke, overnight, I love healthy eating. I'd eat healthy all day long, but overnight we had a whole new refrigerator, you know, pantry setup. because there is a lot more information about it. There's a lot more information about, but there's so much information. And you know, you kind of mentioned that to me, that there's this disconnect between sort of caring about all of the stuff and then actually just going shopping for food.
just go shopping. I know. Can I just go get my stuff?
And so where do, there's two different perspectives. There's a consumer perspective and the brand perspective. The brand perspective, where do you go from there? Because people do want all of these things now, but there's also some education mm-hmm. that needs to happen, right? What's, you know, what's sustainable farming and all these things. And then there's the consumer side, where the consumer, like, they want it now. And if they hear someone who was some influencer tell them that it was a bad, they're going to eat or not eat, or consume or not consume. And the mm-hmm. consumable market is just, it's a wild market anyway, for someone to dive into. And so from your perspective, your passion, how do brands operate? And then as consumers, what do we do about it? How do we engage with it? How do we kind of combine with the brands? How do we support it? Where do you stand mm-hmm. on all of that stuff?
Yeah, it's tough, because I think, you know, we should be able to rely on third-party agencies mm-hmm. in this country that actually set the standards, yeah. and they do, but, like, we should be able to trust those standards mm-hmm. in our manufacturing decisions as consumers in the store. The standards are different in this country than some countries.
Yeah.
I think they might even vary state to state a little mm-hmm. bit. So, again, there's not one size fits all. It depends on the person. Mm. I grew up, you know, again, grateful for this one, growing up on just a very natural farm in Vermont, where, you know, it was just very, like, grassroots kind of. We grew a lot of the things mm-hmm. we consumed, or our neighbors did, farmers market type environment.
Yeah.
And, so I think number one is, like, to walk the talk. Like, if we're going to promote something as a certain category or benefits, like, let's be sure you're 100% sure about that. Mm-hmm. You can go through the certifications, but I know there's lots of claims we can make in marketing materials, social media, even mm-hmm. labels
yeah.
that's not regulated. So, you know, I just saw a piece the other day about, like, beauty beverages. And I'm like, there's a whole thing about, like, these beverages are positioned in, like, a beauty category now. And I was like, huh, okay.
Interesting.
Does that mean because I have, like, white tea in my product, which is really good for your skin, like, right. I could claim this as a beauty product? Like, no. I mean, maybe I could. Maybe I should go down that path. But I guess the point is, like, how are you backing that content up? Yeah. And I believe in karma. Like, I just believe to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, how, you know, I'm not going to produce something that I wouldn't consume, mm-hmm. that I wouldn't want my family to consume. And mm-hmm. I think as manufacturers, there has to be a purpose to every ingredient. Mm-hmm. So whether you're organic, regenerative or not, like, if there's a filler or an added ingredient or something artificial, what's the reason?
Mm.
Like, is it to make it cheaper? Is it to make it, I don't know, better tasting, better consistency? It's all those things.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this is something we're putting inside our body. Like, it's up to the consumer, but I do think there's a responsibility that the brands have,
mm-hmm.
You know, not to use words like natural, healthy, if you can't back that up. And I mean, I've gone kind of on another level in terms of, like, doing all my own sourcing,
mm-hmm.
but it's because I started on the farm level and then I created a product. So I know the farmer, I know a lot of the farmers I work with, not all of them, but we visit many of the farms where I'm investing in one of the farms. Like, so we're awesome. Building a vertically integrated supply chain for a lot of our products. Wow. So that's more than maybe a lot of people want to take on. It definitely adds another dimension of just work and time and responsibility, but it's impactful.
Yes.
And it's a lot of fun. And that's just where I get joy.
Yeah.
I get joy in being part of that.
Yeah.
And I like to control my supply chain because I want to know how the people are being treated. What is the mm-hmm. soil looking like? What are the mm-hmm. conditions at the farm?
Yeah.
And I do believe if we can continually, like, educate people about the importance of the farming conditions
mm-hmm.
and rotating crops and how are the pollinators and the birds and just the general environment at the farm, you can tell when you visit whether people are happy, whether, you know, what does the air smell like? What does the water taste like?
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, too much of our earth is being destroyed right now for different agricultural reasons and different developmental reasons. So I just, that to me is, you know, something that I've found like definitely tugs at my heartstrings and makes me feel good about. So it's
I love that.
It's a lot. It's a lot, I think, for new brands to maybe look at. But I guess I would ask, if you're creating, why are you creating a product? Like, what is the reason? Because we definitely don't need just another product in stores.
Right.
Is it because you think this is missing from the markets and you think you're going to scale it and sell it and get rich? Maybe. But like, it's got to be more than that.
Right. Is it, is it really somebody else's actual solution? Or, or need that isn't just filling a black, you know, void, you know, real benefit to their lives. I love,
and you know, it's most brands don't blow up in a few years. Like, it takes time. And so if someone's creating a product because they see a trend and they want to like jump on the wave, well, if you see the trend, it's already in motion. And by the time you get your thing up and running and in stores and branded and marketed, like, it's already on its way. And if it's really just a trend, then, you know, are you going to be able to build and scale and get acquired in by the time it's over?
Right.
Or then what? So I would say, you know, it's great if you're, you know, building something over time. Like for us, we've been building over time. And now there's this huge trend of like sober curious, which, okay, that's great for us, but it's not why. It's not like, okay, we're going to create something to appeal to the sober curious crowd. It's like, no, we're sober and we made this and it serves a purpose then, and it will continue to, because the trend of like caring about our health isn't going away.
Yeah, man, it's that right there, folks, I think is the, worth the cost of entry. That
you charge people?
No, absolutely not. It's free.
I'm kidding.
We should, because this is powerful though. This is powerful that there we're always and forever, and we have been since the beginning of time, considering our health, considering longevity of life, considering what's going into our bodies. And it is so funny to me, because I think about it and I'm like, all the new science and all the new tech, it's great and I love it. It's awesome. There's good and bad to all of it. But from the beginning of time, people have proved long and healthy life from very simple things. And so it's an interesting thing to think about as a brand, to think about as organization, to think about as a consumer, because it's, I mean, it's just, it's a whole ecosystem that we're all in. Of course, the consumer goods market is just a wild one. It's a journey, but from my perspective, you're doing it well. You're doing it from an exciting standpoint, from a passionate standpoint, sort of a multifaceted standpoint, which is encouraging to, I think, younger generation. As we wrap up, I had a couple more thoughts for you. Or questions rather. One, I'm just so curious. You are a mom, you've got a son, you have a product. Does your son enjoy your product? And if so, which is his favorite flavor?
Yeah, well, to get an honest answer, you'd probably have to ask him without me in the room. But of course, and
it'd be one word. He'd get only one word.
Yeah, because cool he just teenager. Turned 13. Well, fun story. I mean, so he's playing travel baseball year round. Yeah. So on the weekends, that's what I'm doing now. But there's like a lot of downtime in between the games. But yesterday we were driving back from this town up in Tennessee. And I always bring Cirilla, of course. Like, I'll bring a cooler, but I try not to, you know, I try to offer other options so he doesn't just feel like forced to drink Cirilla. Yeah. But I'll have like waters, sparkling waters, a couple other brands. And it was just funny because on our way back, I went probably 10 minutes out of my way off the highway because I knew there was an Earth Fair grocery store.
Yeah.
And I knew they had a hot bar and it'd be a good stopping place. And
yeah.
We're in the store and checking out. And of course, the cooler right by the checkout, it had this lemonade that mm-hmm. he really likes. And I'll buy it in the big glass jar. It looks like a milk jug.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great because you can return the glass. They'll
That's
give you
awesome.
Like your deposit back. Yeah. But it's high in sugar.
Yeah.
It's really, it's just like, I cringe. And it's like, it's, you know, the same price as my drink, but I still cringe at that because
yeah.
I don't spend much money on other people's drinks. So
yeah.
It was just a funny moment where I was like, he's like looking at the lemonade and then he looked at me and I was like, I have some Cirilla in the car. I have an apple. Apple's his favorite. So I was like, I have an apple. And I could just tell he wanted this lemonade. But, you know, sometimes I don't win. And
parents,
you know,
aren't going to win them all.
He does. He likes the lemonade. He likes, I'm just going to shout out a couple other brands because Koya makes this strawberry chocolate
yes.
smoothie type.
Oh, yeah.
And it's during baseball. Like, I will splurge and get that for
yeah.
him. It's so good, like, during a game. But all around favorite in my household, not my favorite, but my family's mm-hmm. is our apple flavor.
Nice.
And it actually, like, points to my husband because he came in the lab one day and I was working in the lab with Puff, who's, you know, runs the whole thing. And we were working on another flavor, and this was a couple years ago. And Eddie came in just to say hi. He's
yeah.
not part of the formulating team
sure.
at all. And, like, there was a table next to us and it had some of my black tea sitting on it and it had a jug of like cider or apple juice
mm-hmm.
and he was like, huh, I wonder what would happen if we put these together.
No.
We were like, huh? Like, it was just this peanut butter and jelly moment.
Yeah.
And he did it and it was amazing.
Yeah.
And it's everyone loves it. Like,
you gotta love
it's
that.
Not our top seller, but it's
yeah.
like once you taste it, you're like, oh my
this
god,
is amazing.
This is insane.
Oh, that's so cool, man. I love that. I was going to ask you.
So he calls it his flavor. He calls it his.
I mean,
like,
it is.
He will
yes.
die for that. I mean, yeah. If he sees a store, is like, because
yeah.
sometimes they'll change.
It's called
it
Eddie's
out,
apple,
you know?
Right?
It should be. Yeah.
I love it. We don't want to give him too big of a head here, but
yeah.
I love that. You know, it's so funny. I think from outside looking in, obviously we look at companies, we look at you, we look at any other, you know, consumer goods, and it's like we just see the thing. And then you start talking to people's families and you know, I've talked to a couple of their founders and I hear their kids and they're just like, yeah, I'm so done with, you know, mom and dad's product or whatever it is. And so it's cool to see it integrated in family and cool to see what people think about it.
Yeah.
I love to hear you mention Koya. One of the things I love to ask just other founders is, what are some other brands out there that you are excited about or excited mm-hmm. by? It could be cross industry, could be another completely separate industry, but what are a couple brands that mm-hmm. you've seen that you just appreciate right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I'm part of a women's entrepreneur network here mm-hmm. in like a mastermind group here in Asheville. And
yeah.
there's about 20 of us, like, women CPG founders. So, I mean, I love supporting their products. Just today, I was down at a Marriott here in town, like, mm-hmm. meeting with the buyer. And I saw my friend Rachel had Botanical Bones on display there, which is a dog bone company.
Oh, cool.
And it's just really cool how she's doing it. I don't even have a dog right now, but
mm-hmm.
I love her product.
Yeah.
I haven't tasted it, but it's on a mission and
yeah.
they've just created some really cool dog treats. And I think the way she's building, if you look at her Instagram, Botanical Bones, is
mm-hmm.
really interesting because it's all completely organic. It's organic content. Like,
that's awesome.
She has so many passionate consumers
yeah.
who just post with their dogs.
Oh,
and
that's
it's
so good.
That whole like pet sector is crazy interesting.
Wow.
I've, you know, not even dipped my toes in, but it's amazing how much money people will spend on their pets and how
oh,
much they
goodness.
care. And
yeah,
you know, we're,
it's awesome.
Like I have this, just my new little campaign in my community is I found out recently that Roundup is being sprayed where I live.
Oh.
And I was just devastated. I'm like, okay, I do this, you know, food, exercise, all these things. And now this is what they're putting on the roads and the yards. So it's, I'm now like campaigning with my HOA and and it's really interesting because I'm taking what I've learned in business and you know, being very like politically like careful, and this is something I care about, and presenting it as like, this is an issue of health and longevity, to your point before, like we all moved here because we wanted to feel like healthy, safe, and we could live a long life. So it's just interesting because there's someone who's okay with using it, but when it comes to the dog park in our neighborhood, they will only use like this natural salt and vinegar spray down there. And I'm like, wait a second, we have kids, humans, squirrels, rabbits, and all. And but it's the dog, it's the concern over the dog. So I mean, that's an interesting
market. Dogs and cats, wild. That's amazing.
But what was
the botanicals called? The dog?
Botanical bones.
All right. Botanical
bones. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And then like in terms of what's in our kitchen, we're just, we're big Whole Foods shoppers, local co-ops, and we try to, you know, eat, we do eat meat. We eat like grass fed, you know, brands that we know and,
you haven't got your own cow yet.
My husband, not yet. Actually, my husband's really into cooking, like with venison and organ meat, and he's like the whole paleo.
I love it.
You know, not hunting. My dad was a hunter.
Yeah,
kind of like grow what you eat, hunt what you eat, and you know, be like respectful and kind of honor whatever comes into your kitchen and just. You know, not take any of it for granted.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. Sarah, you've got an amazing mission. You've got an amazing life. We didn't even scratch the surface on everything, but I'm so grateful for just the thoughts and the experience and the movements that you're trying to push in the world. If people want to follow along with what you have, or if they want to get Cirilla, where can they find you? Where can they find your products?
Yeah, so it's drinkcirilla.com. You can order on our website or Amazon. We have a storefront there.
Nice.
And it's S-A-R-I-L-L-A, pronounced like gorilla, which we didn't talk about the gorillas in Rwanda, which live near our tea farm. Yeah. But we'll have to do that another time. And we're active on Instagram, drinkcirilla. Cool. I'm probably most active on LinkedIn. I post probably once a day. I'm Sarah Stender Delaney on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Awesome.
And I do answer my messages on LinkedIn.
She does. This is how we got connected.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I was very grateful for it. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your story and your heart today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for the platform and the space that you've created.